This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
This is The Mainframe. We're continuing on our Deadly Conversion Busters. Welcome back, everybody. This episode, we're going to be talking about turning fear into trust. How you doing there, Chris?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to going to see the new Avengers film, and I'm trying to not see any spoilers at all, which is difficult with the world of social media and everybody trying to get the scoop and everything. So my fear today is that I'm going to see spoilers before I see the film.
I know it's been really hard because it was actually released in the UK a couple weeks ago. So, you know, I love reading spoiler sites, but usually about what's coming versus somebody who's already seen it talking about it. So I do enjoy the spoilers that are people are anticipating or kind of guessing what's happening. So the past couple of weeks, trying to avoid the actual spoilers from the movie, but still kind of seeing what people are anticipating has been good. But
I've seen on Facebook, you know, you see the headline and then you see an image. I've had spoilers that they think they're not spoiling it, but the image actually answers the question in the headline. And it's like, why do this? Why do this to your fans? Anyway.
So. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, we're going to see it today. So hopefully I won't have to worry about that. But, you know, that actually is a nice segue into the fear into trust, because another area you see that kind of thing, anytime you're reading about some, so let's say it's an older thing. You know, I used to joke that, you know, there's some books that I'm just now reading that other people have read, and I'm afraid of finding spoilers from a book that's, you know, 20 years old or something. Mm-hmm. And so there are some sites that do a good job of kind of talking about things without spoiling too much. I love IO9, and they do a great job of talking about things without spoiling things. If they're going to spoil it, they will tell you clear in advance, and it will be in the headline. There won't be an image. It'll be very clear that there's a spoiler coming. And that's helped build trust. So I know that I can go to that site. I can get good information. If I want spoilers, I can find them. But if I don't want spoilers, they're not there. And that's, you know, that's a good example of turning the fear of, oh gosh, I don't want to stumble on anything and accidentally spoil this, into trust. And knowing that this site does a good job of kind of, you know, kind of keeping those spoilers sequestered, so you don't have to worry about it. But they're there if you want to go see them.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good example of turning a negative into a positive. If everybody else has this atmosphere of will they or won't they spoil it, this risk of spoiling, finding that IO9, that equivalent where you are confident they're never going to spoil anything, gives you some extra warm and fuzzy feelings, that extra benefit over and above the content. It's a safe place. One of the examples I use a lot, why people don't get comments, why people don't get interaction, why people seem to have, you know, crickets and tumbleweeds whenever they ask a question, is your comment area, your community needs to be a safe place. It needs to be a place where people aren't going to be criticized, mocked, or attacked, or trolled, right? It seems like an obvious thing, but how many comment areas have you found that have been just completely toxic and it's been back away, as soon as you see it, it's just terrible. So I think another good thing about IO9 is it doesn't tend to be one of these comment areas where it's just horrible, where everybody's attacking each other and mocking each other and being negative.
Yeah, using that specifically, one of the things I love about the comments on IO9 is it's nerds and geeks actually having discussions. And sometimes they're heated discussions because you know, your view versus another view. But it's always tends to be respectful. And that's a way to build trust, because like you just said, you know, there's not too many sites where I enjoy reading the comments. IO9 is an example of one where I do, because I actually get a lot from the other fans that are talking in there, because they're doing it in a way that's respectful, but that they're still not backing down from their ideas. And that's a way of balancing. And that's really what you're trying to do when you're building trust, is creating a place where your prospects or your customers know that they can come and get the information they need without feeling like they're going to get something else out of it that's, you know, that's a negative.
Yeah. And when we talk about trust in marketing and we're talking about conversion busters, the first thing we always think about is what is going to stop somebody from buying. But it starts way before then. Obviously, if you look untrustworthy, nobody's going to buy from you, or very few people are going to buy from you. Some of them will take the risk. But what you have to do is establish a safe place and understand what fears your prospect has. And Tony and I just discussed the fear of spoilers. That's not necessarily something to do with your sales page, but it's part of the overall environment of dealing with you. So what fears do your prospects have? What worries do your prospects have? What are the things that are going to hold back your prospect and make you less of a guaranteed proposition? And in a future episode, in the next episode, we'll be talking about objections. Fear is one of the key objections. What is stopping them from buying? If you can turn that fear around, if you can turn it into trust, then not only will you have locked in those prospects so that they're more likely to want to work with you, but also you're going to stand apart from a lot of the market, which is what we were just talking in the previous episode, which is standing out and being unique.
Yeah, and the main thing you need to do to really establish that trust is you have to have proof. You have to use different methodologies and different techniques and different technologies and tools you have available to demonstrate and prove that you are trustworthy. And social proof is a big part of that. I mean, if you look at, you know, a good example is t-shirt sites. I buy a lot of t-shirts. And one of the things that started, Threadless was an early company that did this, and designed by humans and some of the others. What they do is they use their community of customers and artists that are creating these shirts to demonstrate and create social proof that these are quality items that other t-shirt collectors would want. And using that social proof, creating a community that says, yeah, I love this image, or I don't like this image, this one's not that great, don't like this quality of the shirt. Having that social proof goes a long way to establish trust.
Yeah, and t-shirts is a really good example as well, because there's the social proof of seeing people walking around in them. It's kind of its own ad. And with people like Tony and I, if you see something really cool like that, that connects to something that is one of your passions, there's an eagerness and an anticipation and an excitement, but there's also the fear that it's going to be ruined as soon as it's washed, or it's going to fade, or it's going to be blurry, the colors are going to be bad. I'm actually wearing one right now, which is a series of robots. So it's got R2-D2, and it's got Bender from Futurama, and it's got a stormtrooper in front of this lineup. And already the colors aren't very good. And it's a shame. It's one of my favorite t-shirts, but the colors have already started fading. Those reviews, you know, if you go to Amazon, one of the reasons you go to Amazon is because of all the reviews. And it's not the 5-star reviews, and it's not necessarily the 1-star reviews. You look at the 3 stars and you actually read them. And that, in a way, is social proof. And it's also a form of evidence, especially when on Amazon it says that this person is actually a purchaser of that product. You know, how many books reviews have you read where the person clearly never read the book, or, you know, never read it in detail, or they've done the review based on chapter one? So it's not just the social proof in terms of 1,000 likes on Facebook. It's also the quality of the social proof that really has an impact. So if you can get people to do good testimonials, not only is that social proof in that you've got somebody who will talk about the product and service, but the detail of that testimonial can really be a conversion booster, especially if you put the testimonial right in the sales material where it's most appropriate. You know, if you're talking about the depth of your training, then have a testimonial that talks about the depth of your training.
Yeah, testimonials are huge. And what you were talking about, the quality, also makes up a big thing. I mean, one of the things you'll see too is video walkthroughs, for example, for software or some other type of demonstration through video. And another thing that does is it shows that it proves how this fits, how this works. you'll see this on Zappos does, you know, they'll do mini videos of some of their shoes, and you'll have other places that show videos of their product. The video reviews on Amazon are great, especially for things like luggage or computer cases, because you can actually see people, you know, strapping in their computer or putting their stuff in and using video sometimes to demonstrate something that, you know, may not be as clear in copy, like how a product is used. Is great. You'll see a lot on Kickstarter. Sometimes the videos can make or break a Kickstarter. And that's just another form of evidence or proof of how this product is going to do what it says it's going to do. Another way to kind of build that trust.
Kickstarter is a brilliant example, because the fear of Kickstarters is this vaporware? Is this going to be another ripoff where they just take the money and run? So the video of showing a physical item that actually exists in the real world is huge. And I think it's one of the reasons that the YouTube unboxing videos are so popular. You know, when somebody buys something, they unbox it on video, and you can see them take all the packaging apart, and they can take all the items out of the box. That's giving people the experience of ownership before they actually purchase.
Yeah, that's a great example. And the other thing that you have to think about when you're kind of giving proof is making sure that it's accurate proof, and that it's not above and beyond. Because that's one of the things one of the things people would get in trouble with, and the FTC has gotten really bad or really cracked down on this a lot, is testimonials that were sometimes they were even paid testimonials or well above and beyond what the product actually does. And that can actually, just like the first thing we're talking about, that nobody will buy. It may work the first time, but after that, you know, the message gets out there and you've actually turned that trust back into fear, and nobody will want to buy from you. So you need to make sure that your proof is an accurate depiction of what it is that you were able to provide, whether it be a testimonial, whether it be a video, whether it be social proof, whatever you're providing, make sure it's accurate and real.
Yeah. And social proof works really well because people don't want to be the first, or they want to know that other people have experienced a positive experience from it. So quantity helps a lot, and seeing a variety of names and faces works really well. One of the things that you need to do is try and match your testimonials and your community to the people you're trying to attract. And I found a really strange thing with the course that I used to run. I had a couple of testimonials and case studies that seemed too good to be true. And when I took them out and when I edited them down, the conversion increased. So actually the proof was beyond what people were anticipating, and it made people worried. Rather than giving people comfort, it actually made people think that I was making it up. And so you have to find something that's going to be persuasive, but not, in the prospect's mind, unrealistic.
Yeah, that's a great example.
So one of the things that you have to do is, it's like those Amazon 3-star reviews. Having the presence of those makes people comfortable that real people have purchased, they're not all bought or made up testimonials. So what you can do is, and we're turning fear into trust, have the worry or the concern in the testimonial, and actually get people to talk freely. So you could ask people, what were you worried about before you purchased? And that's a really weird thing to ask. But if you have a testimonial that says, I was worried that I was going to be overwhelmed with content, but actually Chris broke it down into bite-sized pieces of material that I could really take action on, that is turning fear into trust. The fear is that you're going to be overwhelmed or not going to be able to cope with it all. But actually, the way it's delivered turns that on its head, and it becomes a good thing. It's broken down into manageable parts. So testimonials that turn fear into a positive can be really convincing, and it just speaks to the prospect's concerns.
Yeah, that's a great approach, because really what we're trying to do here is kind of avoid risk, and we're all risk adverse. So the third item that you really need to focus on is how to mitigate risk.
The Mainframe is brought to you by the Rainmaker Platform, the complete website solution for building your own online marketing and sales platform. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform. Stop trying to hack together your website yourself. Head over to rainmaker.fm/platform today and get back to building your business.
So we're mitigating risk, and the first place everybody looks to is the guarantee, right?
Yeah, guarantees are huge. It's something that we are big proponents of, because here's the thing. If you have a product that somebody doesn't want after they've received it, they're going to ask for a refund anyway. And if they're not going to get a refund, they're going to go to get a chargeback, which is even worse. So if this is something that's going to happen anyway, you might as well make it very clear up front that you're going to let them make that decision on their own. And that's a way to make their purchase, make them feel more comfortable about their purchase. And by offering that guarantee that, you know, you that they will be happy with their purchase, otherwise you will refund them, will give them a sense of trust that you really can't build any other way. It's that sort of last barrier to purchase that you're really trying to get through.
Yeah, and we see guarantees and don't believe them. You know, that whole thing of, yeah, but you're going to get me to fax in triplicate to some PO box in, you know, Nowhereville, and you're going to have to call on this telephone hotline that's permanently engaged. And so it has to be a believable guarantee. And that's why you have these guarantees that say, for any reason whatsoever, even if you run the lawnmower over it, because it has to be a believable guarantee that's fair and actually matches with what you're offering. So, you know, if the course takes 6 weeks to run through, don't give people a 10-day guarantee.
Yes. And also, that another way to make sure that it's legit is applying it to the right product. Another example is if you're giving a live conference, a lot of times, you know, after a certain point, you're only able to give a partial refund because you're actually having to pay for something, say, pay for the room or something else. And by making it very clear, look, up until this point, I can give you all your money back. But after that, there has to be something else, because this is a real thing, a real world thing that is going to either cost me money or, you know, I can't get a smaller room if everybody decides they don't want to go. So that's the other side of it, is making that guarantee realistic in a way that you can really deliver on the guarantee. So you don't want to lose a bunch of money, but you also want to make it so it's that balance. You know, if it's a course, then like Chris was saying, make sure that the guarantee is after they can see the course, or at least get a good part of it. I mean, sometimes you'll use a money back guarantee, let's say a 30-day guarantee, instead of a trial. So you let them use it for 30 days. And then if by then they've decided it's not right for them, you can give them a refund back. So you need to make sure it does match the product and it fits with the offer that you're providing.
Yeah, it has to be fair to them and it has to be fair to you. And it has to make sense, right? So Tony was just talking about, if you've got a live event and you've already ordered the vegan meals, then it's not fair to you to then have to give a refund so close to the event. But earlier out, before anything's set in stone, of course you're going to give a refund. And one of the things that you're doing is establishing that you're a fair person to deal with, but it can't be all hinged on the guarantee. So it has to be congruent and consistent with everything else, with everything that you've been doing up until that point, all the messaging, all the communication, all the interaction. It just fits. So one of the things you can do is case studies as content. Now, not a case study that says you're awesome. That's just PR. It's just advertising. What you have to do is a case study that is good content, valuable content that people can learn from, but also positions you as a person who can deliver for this target market. And the way you do that is the before and after. This is where they were before. This is what they wanted to achieve. This is what they wanted to resolve. These are the challenges they went through, and this is the outcome. And what you're doing is basically the hero's journey. You know, this was the ordinary world. This was the world of challenge and, you know, the difficult second act, the Empire Strikes Back, as it was. And then this is the third act, the culmination of all that. And then this is the happily ever after. But you make it about them, not about you. So you helped facilitate that, but you want the audience, the prospect, to go on that journey and feel the challenges and the outcome and perceive the sense of ownership. And if you do that well, it's both good, valuable, interesting content. It's also mitigating the risk, because they're almost like trialing going through the process with you.
Exactly. That's the whole point of how you use a case study to mitigate risk is you allow your prospect to see themselves in the person who is in the case study so they can actually identify with somebody who's gone through a similar process and they've actually benefited from it. So that's the importance of using a case study that way because it allows your prospect to see themselves doing that same journey as the person in the case study.
Yeah, and part of the case study can be talking about the objections, and we'll talk about that more in the next episode. But all the time you're saying something positive and constructive, the audience is going to have in their mind, yes, but. Those yeah buts can really ruin your conversions. So a case study is a way of getting them under the radar as part of a story and say, you know, I know how you feel, but this is what I discovered, you know, I had this worry too, but it turned out okay because, and it means that you don't have to directly hit them head on because sometimes you're raising an objection they never even thought of. So right. Stories can really work well for that.
Yeah. So really when we're turning fear into trust, what are the main takeaways here? What are the things that we really have to focus on that you can use to really make people feel that you are trustworthy in what you're offering?
So it starts with empathy, understanding where they're coming from, and trying to turn some of those fears into positives to show that you've addressed them and that you understand and that you can really help. So empathy is key. After that, you have to prove it, and that can be social proof. It can be case studies, but it could be as simple as showing people behind the scenes in a video or just showing how everything fits together. And testimonials can really help in terms of proof, but they can also work in mitigating risk. And obviously, the biggest way you can mitigate risk for your prospects is a really good, solid, believable guarantee.
So really what we've been talking about here is trust is one of the big main objections that you'll encounter. So in the next episode, we're going to talk about some other objections. And if you ignore those objections, what that can be a big conversion buster. And we'll cover that in the next episode.